Thank you again for coming to the formerly underappreciated topic of internet governance. We are now talking about one of the more exciting developments in this field, which is the global multi-stakeholder meeting on the future of internet governance, the GumFig.
They changed its name this morning, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got another name, another acronym. We have here some very senior people who are engaged in this initiative. And I think I have told the panelists that I'm going to start out with one of the initiators of this, a man who has taken some bold initiatives and has helped to spark this process. And I'm simply going to let him speak for himself for 5 or 7 minutes about what we're trying to accomplish and how this happened. So I give you Fadi Shahadeh, the president of ICANN.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Hilton. Good to be with you here on this panel, fellow panelists, everyone in the room, good afternoon. Good to be here. The year ahead is an important year in internet governance. The agenda, when we looked at it late last year, looked very much focused on a defensive posture to multilateral approaches to internet governance. A group of us in the technical community came together and agreed that it's time to take a less defensive posture and actually tell the world that we have something great to share, something that works. We've managed to keep the identifiers of the internet working well, the policies produced bottom-up in a multi-stakeholder way for years. The DNS has been up forever, never been down. Not many systems can claim that. And things work quite well. Now, how can we tell the world that we have something great that the world should embrace and take it to the next level? And when we looked at the calendar did not have many events that allowed us to express this view. So Brazil became a little bit the beginning of a series of events, because there will be a series of events. We have the IGF in Istanbul, hopefully in September. Now we're hearing in August, but okay, sometime later this year. There will be others. We are hearing about an academic event that may come together also later this year, led by major institutions in the world. Multiple events that will express this view that we should govern the internet together. Okay, this is basically what led us to Brazil. So Brazil is the first one. I had a meeting with President Rousseff late last year on the heels of her big speech at the UN. And at the time, Rousseff was clearly searching for a way forward. And we discussed what would be the best way forward. I made the pitch that the way the internet has been governed in Brazil itself is another good example of a multi-stakeholder approach to govern the internet. Brazil has something called CGI. You can look it up on cgi.br. That is multi-stakeholder. Government actually does not have the majority of that CGI board. 17 years in the working, and it's worked very well for Brazil, and it's highly well coordinated with the global standard and policy setting bodies for the internet. So I told her, you have the example right into your backyard. Why don't you follow that model for internet governance, as opposed, frankly, to your speech at the UN, which pretty much pointed to, let's go back to a multilateral model to address some of the bigger issues. So for those who think she did not understand multi-stakeholder approaches versus multilateral, I can assure you she does. She gets it. The question was, frankly, a decision by that president whether she would like to embrace the model we believe in versus push for a multilateral intergovernmental approach to internet governance. And the good news is she embraced the multi-stakeholder approach. And coming out of that meeting, she asked me, what should I do next? And I said, how about you bring us together with your leadership and we discuss this and do it at a conference here in Brazil? She said, I like it. When would you like to make it happen? Frankly, I was surprised. I did not expect the president of Brazil to be asking me for that much guidance. So I said, Madam President, how about next May? And she said, oh, May is too close to the football season. How about April? I said, fine, April is good. So she, right there and then, picked the date of April 23rd. So this was very spontaneous on her part, but very real. And here we go. And today they announced the name of the conference to be Net Mundial, using the Spanish word mundial or the Latin word mundial to describe the football, actually, event every 4 years. But they called it Net Mundial as a moniker, and netmundial.br is up as of today. And it's .org as well. So I think it's important to see this event in Brazil as an event, A, that is not an end by itself, but rather the beginning of a dialogue that will be continued at the IGF as well as in other places, number one. Number two, to view that event as a true multi-stakeholder event inside out. The DNA of this event is multi-stakeholder. It'll be the first outside of the UN Internet Governance Global Conference that is chaired by people from civil society, business, government, academia. Every committee running the meeting includes people from all these stakeholders. Bottom up, the whole event will be open. It will be inclusive. We are now discussing with them setting global hubs for real-time two-way video. Inside this, so it's open. It's going to be an open event. The one last thing on the event, the proposed outcome. What is expected out of that event? That would be then input to other things that will happen afterwards, because as I said, it's not an end to itself. The first outcome that is expected is a set of principles for internet governance. And these are principles for internet governance, right? We're not going to broaden that to be every possible principle under the sun. It's about internet governance. The second bit, which is very important, is what should the internet governance ecosystem evolve into? And I want to make two key points about that. The internet governance ecosystem that exists today for the identifiers like ICANN, works, and it works very well. Does it need to evolve? Of course, everything needs to evolve and embrace the needs of the future. So we will endeavor to define how that system needs to evolve and what are the characteristics of the system moving forward. And then the second thing this will do is to talk about how we extend the model of the current system to address the issues that are on the internet rather than the issues off the internet. And I make that distinction clearly because today what ICANN and the ITF and the W3C do is we do internet governance in a multi-stakeholder way for the things off the internet. Now the world wants to talk about how to manage the issues that are on the internet. Now that ecosystem that we will define together will, again, evolve the current system for the current things of the internet, but also discuss how we would extend it to the things on the internet. That's the intent of Brazil, and I hope this gives the background you were looking for, Professor.
That's right. So what we want to do next is basically just, we have four more really senior panelists, and we're going to ask them fundamentally what they think this meeting can accomplish. What are the best upsides of the meeting? And what are the worst-case downsides? And what they think is most likely to happen, actually. So we're going to start with Carolina Rossini, who is the project director of the Latin America Resource Center at the New America Foundation. We'll go from Carolina to Steve Del Bianco, who is with NetChoice and a prominent figure in the business constituency of ICANN. Eric Loeb of AT&T will follow, and former Ambassador David Gross, who was a very active player in our delegation to the World conference on international telecommunications, the famous Dubai conference, will hit cleanup.
Carol, yes. Or WIF, one or the other, right?
So first, thank you, Milton, for the invitation, and thank you, Fadi, for your presentation. As a warning, I am Brazilian. I've been working in this for around 13 years, and I've been directly involved since its beginning with trying to actually develop and implement CGI policies, and also with the well-known Marco Civil, which is our legislation we are trying to push forward for many years in Brazil, that actually try to implement many of the principles that we think are crucial for internet governance and user rights and internet freedom in that country and beyond. I think talking just about one meeting is kind of boring if we don't provide context for that meeting, where it's coming from, and then going to where it might be going to. And I think that it's really hard to not bring, of course, the I don't know if I actually agree with that, but the vision of before Snowden and post-Snowden revelations, right? So I'm still struggling with that definition of the world, but we have to take in consideration that when Dilma understood what was going on and heard the news, she had to take action, right? Brazil, different from U.S., actually, international policy, we are not a very interventionist country. We actually provide help when countries need, but we are not interventionist. But at a certain point, that role may have to change in some areas that actually our rights as Brazilian citizens are being intervened or afflicted. So I do believe that is as part of statecraft and as part of the national sovereignty of Brazil, there is the right to privacy and to a private life is included on that right of sovereignty. And it's very simple for me, agreeing or not with the next steps that Dilma has taken, and I can map very briefly for you. She had to react. Right, we can agree or disagree how important or not the surveillance is, and if it's legitimate or not. Actually, I don't even need to do that work much, since hundreds of congressional representatives in the U.S. are already doing. You guys have more than 40 bills already in Congress trying to review the NSA structure and policies. So you are having this debate in-house, which is really fortunate. So Dilma has a lead of a country, a very expressive country that actually has almost 80% of internet traffic passing through U.S. and almost like 90% of our Brazilian websites are hosted in U.S. She had to take a step, right? And since the channels on internet governance are not clear and multi-stakeholderism is actually not that clear, and you guys have seen that in the panel before, she's probably looking at all the possibilities and seeing what makes more sense also under international law. So as we all know, and I think Fadi was positively opportunistic, like in a good sense, to talk to Dilma and say, we need to talk about this, right? He has a need. We have a need regarding internationalization of ICANN and review the IANA contract and all those things, which do put around the world a feeling that U.S. has that hegemonic centrality within the internet. So that is a feeling. It's reality in some cases, but it's a strong feeling that U.S. going to have to deal with, right? It's not just negate, oh, no, we don't control this. But there are some instruments that are legally binding, like the IANA contract, that actually means a lot of things. But anyway, so she had to, with this move of ICANN and saying, okay, Dilma, let's try to figure out what we can do, the meeting is just one of the responses of Dilma to all of this, right? The other response, as you all know, is the UN resolution that Brazil and Germany had proposed, supported by 50 countries and already approved by 193 countries of the United Nations General Assembly later at the end of last year. It unfortunately does not address surveillance directly, but it does ask that a group needs to be organized to review the practices. The recent review of the NSA report, that almost 300 pages report that was published a couple of weeks ago, the Open Technology Institute has published some releases on that. It doesn't address so deeply the known persons. It says that the national policy of the U.S. should be applied for foreigners, but the question is that enough for U.S. citizens? And if it is, or if it's not, because many advocate groups here have been criticizing those privacy laws, maybe it's also not enough for foreign citizens. So that's a big discussion there. But anyway, so we have the meeting, we have the UN, and we also have something that's very fortunate for Brazil and that many people commemorate, which is the push by the president for our Marco Civil. The Marco Civil has been stagnated in Congress for many years and for many months, facing barriers from telco to the entertainment industry. Tons of compromises have been closed, and the Marco Civil has finally been moving. And hopefully, it's going to be closed this year. And I think the meeting is just one piece of this whole puzzle that Brazil is facing, has a strong country in internet. And when people say about balkanization, first, I think it's a wrong use historically of the concept of balkanization. But besides that, it's actually, I don't think it's true, because Brazil, at the end, we all want to provide more internet access. We all want to provide affordable access. You guys here in the U.S. have tons of advocacy and work on this. You have Alliance for Affordable Internet. You have the Web Foundation. You have all those folks backed by State Department grant and Ford Foundation grant and all these grants trying to do this. Brazil is nothing more trying to provide more infrastructure for its citizens and its citizens in other countries. And by providing more backbones through all connections to Africa and Europe, we are just trying to make the communication more efficient. So it's much more about technology. And one thing that I hear a lot and companies here ask me a lot is the localization issue that came as a response to the surveillance. That's also not true. If you look at the history of this debate in Brazil, Brazil has been having a historic problem of execution of judicial orders regarding data requests for companies like Google and Facebook and other companies that they say, we are American companies, our servers are not here, so we are not under your jurisdiction. And that actually does not stick much international private law, but that's what they have been doing for good reasons in many cases, protecting users, but at the same time, that is a very complex issue because the AMLETs, which are the bilateral agreements, also don't work really well. So the localization issue that came is actually not a response for the surveillance. We know that technically that doesn't work. It's actually much more a response for a conflict of jurisdiction than anything else. So I just want to put this in context, that I think Brazil is in a very important time, reaffirming its position and its importance, both on internet governance policy, but also internet governance infrastructure and the infrastructure to provide access to all its population and beyond. We have very strong agreements to cooperate with Africa countries, for example, due to our Portuguese roots and so on. So I think it's important to understand this and really try to create a dialogue. Brazil is really, we had tons of legitimacy discussions, millions and millions of emails after the IGF. I don't want to enter that. But finally, all the committees are assigned. It's really multi-stakeholder. All the stakeholders pass through has transparent as possible election processes. So I really think it's a true effort of hearing many. So I think it's a really interesting issue that we make, as you guys say, lemonade out of all these lemons and have some good time in Brazil. Thank you.
You have some good lemonade in Brazil.
Steve.
Thanks, Milton. And Milton assigned two questions. He said, what's the best that can happen out of the Brazil meeting? What's the worst that can happen? And I want to end on a positive note, so I think I'll start with what's the worst that can happen. First thing I would fear most is that the anti-NSA, anti-US rhetoric at the conference could provide cover for many, many governments to decide to splinter and require local storage of any data on their citizens. Even if Brazil isn't one of them, the rhetoric ends up driving it there. We heard Dropbox CEO Drew Houston mention this morning how expensive that is for a company that's already his size. Imagine how much of a barrier it is to a startup company who couldn't possibly afford to set up data centers with distributed storage of all the citizen information. And Milton, I would also add that it's not so good for free expression either to have all that data housed locally. The second thing I fear most is that the force of this anti-U.S. rhetoric in Brazil could keep the U.S. government passive and concede the last remaining protection of ICANN from what I would call a United Nations or ITU takeover, which is something that begins or could continue at the ITU Plenipot later this year. Now, why do I say passive? In 2013, Snowden really did reduce the credibility of Commerce and State Department and undercut the previously aggressive defense of the multi-stakeholder model. And of the role that the U.S. had played, the responsible role in establishing ICANN's independence with the affirmation of commitments, which is so strong about global accountability, and also the U.S. defending the U.S.'s responsible role as a steward of IANA. We've heard IANA a few times today. It's the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, and that's the authority, the contract under which ICANN gets to add all those new top-level domains to the web that you're hearing about every day. You'll hear about a lot of them this week. So with crickets coming from the U.S. in 2013, Fadi stepped into the breach, first with the Montevideo Declaration and then with the meeting with Brazil's president to organize the conference. And it's not just because Fadi's got infinite energy and considerable charm that you've seen here today, but it's also because ICANN would love for the U.S. government to hand over permanent control of the IANA authority to ICANN. And to me, that might be among the worst things that could happen this year, particularly in Brazil. Let me explain why. Brazil understands that an IANA contract that's no longer controlled by the U.S. would be an easier takeover for the U.N. And so there's no mistake about intentions. Look at the proposal Brazil put in front of the United Nations in 2011. They called for a new global body within the U.N. system to establish international public policies for the Internet and to oversee the bodies responsible for technical and operational functioning of the Internet. And those bodies are ICANN and IANA. And with that kind of declaration coming out of Brazil, it makes it all the more surprising that if Brazil is multi-stakeholder with the CGI that Fadi talked about, why would they abandon that and go for a multilateral UN control of ICANN and IANA? So under that threat, ICANN, Fadi comes to the rescue. He says, no problem, just give IANA to ICANN so it doesn't fall into the hands of the ITU. But I ask you, though, what's left to prevent the UN from taking control through other means once there's no more tether through the IANA contract to ICANN? Because if there's no more threat of withdrawing the IANA contract from ICANN, nothing would stop UN oversight through mechanisms like the UN resolution, mechanisms like an alternate route that's sanctioned and managed by the ITU. And remember what bothers the business community most about the ITU, the multilateral model. It's that, well, every country there gets one vote, no matter how big or small, and the private sector and civil society get no votes at all. Whenever you hear concern about multilateral, just remember that expression, and you'll understand why it's not particularly popular with us. So, Milton, let me just turn to the close. You asked, well, what about the best upsides here? I think the best upside is that the president, Commerce Department, State Department, get a few gulps of Fadi's five-hour energy and come back swinging. And you heard a little bit of that last Thursday with the president, Ambassador Sepulveda last week as well, and then Ambassador Sepulveda again today. So maybe we are beginning to find our voice. And I wouldn't do it justice to replicate Ambassador Sepulveda's answer to the question, did the U.S. lose moral authority? And he handled it in the previous panel. It was outstanding. Another potential upside is that with congressional backing, because an awful lot of folks in this audience or from the Hill, with congressional backing and perhaps some inquiry, the U.S. should explain the NSA reforms we're undertaking. Thank you for recognizing that they're underway. And try to show why the U.S., temporarily at least, should retain the IANA contract authority until we're all sure that ICANN has a permanent accountability mechanism, not just an affirmation it can walk away from with 120 days' notice, and that ICANN is securely protected from an ITU takeover. With that in place, Fadi, you'll get your wish.
All right. Steve, I can't help interjecting here. Can you give me an example of anything the UN has taken over in the last 50 years?
Would be good, actually.
Fadi has one? An example? Did you?
No, I'm saying that would be good if I can.
Yeah, the ITU does an admirable job of running the radio spectrum, and at some point prior to that, the ITU took over the international telegraph system. That was before my time. I don't exactly know how they got it. But consider this for a minute. If the ITU is looking for a way to stay relevant in an internet-based world, they have a huge bureaucracy, a significant budget. It's $300 or $400 million a year, and a lot of folks who believe that a multilateral government-controlled system would be the way to manage, say, the root. And if they were not at all pleased with the way we at ICANN came up with new top-level domains,
right,
it wouldn't be difficult to do a new root.
In a two-way thing here, but it's just my point was simply that. Governments tend to take over things, and insofar as they do, the ITU is their agent when they all agree, or enough of them agree. And I certainly agree that governments can take over things, but I just don't want there to be a view of the ITU as this sort of ravenous multinational corporation that's devouring, entities on their own. So, with that being said, we'll go to a ravenous multinational corporation.
So I'll start, on the geopolitical parts. The people of the Balkans sincerely request a different term than Balkanization. So perhaps we go with splintering, fragmentation. You have it. Let's start with there as a matter of tone for the upcoming meeting. I want to thank Fadi for the efforts and the energy that you are making. I mean, come on, folks, stepping into the breach of many challenging things, including ICANN and ICANN reforms and the uniquely challenging environment that we're in. Anyone who has chaired a process knows just how difficult it is in any community to elicit consensus. And, this isn't a shy community, as you may notice. And, your efforts and your skills and every way you approach things is really admirable. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the effort to move things forward. To the topic of the Brazil meeting and the question that we've been asked today, it's interesting timing. As we say, the website is up today. And yesterday there was a meeting in Sao Paulo to discuss things. But even as we're here today, there's so much we don't know about how participation will work, what the format will be, what the goals are, what the agenda will be. And as someone from the business community and someone who was with a group of other business people last week at a meeting of the International Chamber of Commerce, that is a lot of unknowns going into an event that, whether it is a milestone event among many or, as some people think, something of huge decisional significance, disconcerting. So I preface my views with that, with some optimism of making progress, but, with some caution or uncertainty of what is not yet defined and how will participation work to make sure that things are truly representational, informed, and transparent. So, a few points. One, and it's perhaps a guiding principle, whether for this meeting or for others, it's almost a Hippocratic oath, do no harm. We know improvements are necessary in the internet governance model. We've heard many good things, including on the prior panel, about that. But as we talk about areas for improvement, we can't rush to decisions on this. We need to stress test ideas. We need to make sure that as problems are identified and then solutions to those specific problems are identified, we have a very high degree of confidence that those changes are indeed improvements and don't bring unintended consequences. It's been said before, and I can just repeat it, that the changes we make, they have to actually enhance the different things we care about, security, stability, resilience, interoperability, and not jeopardize it. So, you know, first and foremost, be careful, be specific, do no harm. With that in mind, you know, the best that could happen is if this event as a milestone that contributes to the other fora that are on the calendar already does bring people together, get some valuable input to that, stands by the principle of careful work and analysis, and is not rushed. So that is a concern that I would share when we think, well, let's say, you know, the worst case scenario is if the expectations, once we see this further definition, is this is a decisional summit, right? When we get to something like that, then you have process and substance concerns. Process-wise, is it adequately representative? Is the process of decision-making transparent and well-informed, or is it trying to crunch against very short timing? You know, substance, trying to reach conclusions or declarations. I have some question about this stated goal of reaching global principles in 2 days. That's ambitious, and perhaps not as constructive as the gathering could be. I think the best upside, rather than aiming for those ambitions, would be to focus on consensus on the priority areas of improvement. You know, let's be specific about this. What really needs to be fixed on a policy or technical matter? What existing mechanisms are in place? Which issues require a new mechanism, or which existing mechanisms need to be improved? But to do so in a focused and specific way, and with that as an ambition, that can be a very helpful gathering, and it can contribute to the ongoing conversations that people widely acknowledge have to happen to make this process continue to evolve and be even stronger. So okay. Those are a few of my initial thoughts.
Well, first of all, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's sometimes a little bit like Groundhog's Day because I've been doing this for so long, and a lot of the issues are very similar to everyone in this room, and certainly to me, having dealt with it for a decade or longer. I also want to thank you all for showing up. I thought everyone was going to be at the Bitcoin section, and I thought we were probably, you know, they're giving away money, I assume, there, and we're just thinking about other things. So I appreciate everyone showing up here. Let me play off a little bit about what Eric was saying. We know certain things. There are a lot of things we don't know about the Brazil meeting because it's a work in progress, but we do know, obviously, a few things that I think should inform our thinking about what is possible to have happen there and the impact it's likely to have. We know it's a two-day meeting. That's important. It's important for some of the points that were made earlier. It is not long enough to have substantive discussions and outcome documents be produced. So that means, it seems to me, the focus will, by its nature, be more discussional than decision-making. You combine that with the fact that, at the risk of stating the obvious, it has no decisional authority, and there's no pretext, as far as I have seen, to it being so. So I think if people can be more relaxed and more focused on content and less on decision-making, I think they'll be less disappointed if they're thinking that something significant will come out in terms of something that will bite them inadvertently. We also know that the subject matter is now of interest at the highest political levels. For much of the past decade, it has been very important to all of us in the room and for others, certainly at the ministerial level, but it is now the subject of speeches made by heads of state and is the subject of substantial political interest. That is both good and bad, depending upon how the course of work goes forward. But it seems to me, because we all believe, I think, in this room and elsewhere, believe that these issues really are important for the future, that I think is, on balance, a very, very good thing. because I think the issues that we're talking about and the nature of the discussion is, in fact, very forward-thinking and something in which can have a positive impact even outside of our particular area. We also know that the process is reasonably open, and I say reasonably only because it's not clear exactly who will be allowed to be there just in terms of size of the venue and those types of things. As Fadi indicated, it looks like there may be some opportunity for remote participation using the technology that we all know and love. That will be a potentially important part. But in any event, it's certainly very clear that it will have all of the primary food groups associated with any decision-making. And if you go onto the website, which has been mentioned in just a show, it's a nice, colorful website now, you can see schematically and otherwise that how it's being organized. And I think seeing it in a sort of a schematic is very helpful to show that all of the groups have some representation, recognizing that there is, if you watch the OneNet listserv, lots of confusion and disagreement over who gets to be what role. But nevertheless, those roles are established and are obviously going to be very active participants. What else do we know? We also know that there are a number of important documents that have already been prepared that I think will naturally be part of the discussion. In addition to the call for information to come in from any source into this process electronically. You don't have to go through governments. You don't have to go through groups. It appears to be very open. But we do know that certain things will likely be the source of discussion. The Montevideo statement immediately comes to mind, for example. It has been the source of great discussion. It is likely to be, it seems to me, a point of discussion. There has been discussions that the ICANN panel will have a document that will likely flow in, I suspect, will be part of that discussion. I am sure that lots of other groups will seek to do that. We've heard about a Carl Bildt committee and others that will likely be using both input and output from that. What else do we know? We also know, as Fadi indicated, it's a very important and very, very busy year in terms of the calendar. So we know that the output of this, before we get to the output, we know that the ITU will have the WTDC, a very important, that's the every four-year development conference. That will be very important because clearly issues about broadband and the like in the developing world will be front and center, and I would imagine that what people hear there will inform that which people will discuss in Brazil. We also know going forward that we have an IGF, either in August or September, we will see. We have an ITU plenipotentiary treaty writing conference that will be extraordinarily important. We have a WSIS plus 10 process as well as a WSIS plus 10 something next year. We don't know what that is. And we also know there's likely to be a London meeting that Assistant Secretary Strickling talked about on the previous panel. So we know there'll be lots of places for whatever is discussed, whatever outputs come out of this, for there to be both further discussion and, importantly, potential decision-making. So that heightens the issues, the narrows the scope, it makes it more important. I also feel that for those of us who believe strongly in the importance of a multi-stakeholder process, that Brazil offers an extraordinary opportunity. It's an extraordinary opportunity because at the heart of the multi-stakeholder process is the concept that good ideas don't just come from governments, don't just come from the established groups, but can come from anyone and anywhere. If the openness of this conference is as it appears to be, then what it means is that it's less about the outputs than it is about the listening. Yeah. And Ambassador Sepulveda talked about the importance from a U.S. government perspective of listening, and I could not agree more strongly with his excellent leadership on this. And therefore, what it seems to me is what we should be doing is not only trying to speak and speak loudly about things we believe in, which we always do and I believe will continue, but to listen with great care for new ideas. All that the issues that have been teed up so far cannot be all the sum of good ideas about this, particularly as the process, the technology, and other things change. So it seems to me that we have an opportunity to listen carefully. We can have an opportunity to learn, and we can take that learning to the other forums.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Thank you.
So we have a little bit of time for a bit more panel discussion, then I want to get to the audience. So what I'd like to ask is one of the big stumbling blocks to acceptance of the multi-stakeholder approach is this idea of stakeholder roles that was enshrined in the WSIS document, which Ambassador Gross signed and presumably negotiated.
I've got the scars to prove it, so if you want to see it later, that's right.
There's a tattoo on his back, rumored that. So does the Brazil meeting as a principle, one of the principles that we would be discussing, do we have the opportunity to move beyond that, to get the government to say, yeah, we really do have to yield some policymaking authority to the broader community here if we're in a new transnational institution? Or are they going to reassert this? And I think I'm very interested in all of your opinions about this. So, Steve, why don't you go first?
Yeah. Milton referenced the Tunis agenda in 2005, and paragraph 35 said, this is the consensus, policy authority for internet-related public policy issues is the sovereign right of states. So that's this notion that when it comes to stakeholderism, the only stakeholder who gets a stake is government if it's respect to internet-related public policy. So, Milton, I believe you're asking whether the Brazil conference might see some backing off of that, which was adopted. And that was adopted by a body other than the body that's convening in Brazil. So let's not confuse the two tracks that they're on, because governments want to maintain, as you might understand, the sovereign ability to govern the behavior and expression of their citizens when they're acting within their borders. That's no surprise. And yet, if they all get together in Brazil, and one of the things we expect is a potential set of principles, then I'm very anxious to see the process or mechanism under which who gets to vote on whether these are the approved principles, right? There might be a lot of openness, David, to ideas, but it doesn't sound as if there'll be openness about how they decide if there's a consensus around the principles. If, in fact, there's a mechanism of one country, one vote, and only governments get to vote, then that really won't be anything like a multi-stakeholder process.
But it's pretty clear that won't be the process in Brazil, yeah, because we have these. So Fadi and then Carolina?
Yeah, just to be very clear, because I think there is some misinformation here. There will be no vote in Brazil. There will be no country delegations per se in Brazil. This is a multi-stakeholder meeting. I can assure you that in a press release that will appear tomorrow from the first meeting that happened yesterday, anyone can come to Brazil. There will be open participation to that meeting. This body has no decisional power, and I want to assure Eric, because I know I want to put the same caution and care in the same exact way Eric put it on the table, that there will be no decisional activity going on there. Aside from the fact, as the ambassador clarified, it's not a decisional body anyway, but there will be no attempt to reach a decision or a vote there. Let me be very clear on that. Let me be also very clear that Brazil has had a clear change of course after we met with the president. For example, this very proposal that Steve mentioned, where Brazil was making a very multilateral proposal in the UN environment, was withdrawn after I met the president. So let's be very clear of the facts. The facts is that Brazil is searching for a solution. They have decided to search for a solution in a multi-stakeholder context. We should be all over that. Moreover, and equally more important, we cannot count, with all due respect, on one country or one president to carry this important torch for us. In a year where if we hadn't done that, the debate indeed would have been multilateral, whether at the WTDC or at the plenipot. It would have been governments who would have decided to give up something for us. Now we are in the driver's seat. We are driving the discussion. But we couldn't have kept this entirely in the hands of one government or one country, with all due respect. So we insisted that Brazil engage at least another 10 countries as co-hosts of the conference in order, as I called it, to shore up the middle. And that has happened. 11 countries have been invited. I can give you some news today about a couple, because I was allowed to. Germany has accepted to be one of the co-hosts, as did France in the last 24 hours. And I won't be announcing any other news. Other governments here could do that on their own. But I think that it's important to note that Brazil will not be the lone government at the table, even leading the table. Brazil is opening that up, frankly, at our suggestion and with their full acceptance that this is a good thing, to make sure this is a broader base, not just the Brazilian base. One last thing I want to say. People speak about my energy. It's going to run out. I mean, I'm a human. Let's focus instead on the opportunity we have, not on the energy. We have an opportunity this year to shape how the internet will be governed. Let's not miss it. It doesn't mean we close our eyes to the risks that Eric so well enunciated. He is right. We have to be careful. We are all over every step of this. I can assure you of that. And when I say we, I'm not saying Fadi. I'm saying all the stakeholders who are now at the table, who are watching every step of this. We're very careful. But at the same time, it's a grand opportunity for us to ensure that the world is not left, as the minister from Rwanda told me, with one choice. We had no choice. After the wicket, you left us with only one choice, and it's to run to the ITU. Because at the wicket, when people asked, where do we solve problems like spam? Where do we solve problems like cyberbullying? Where do we solve? And they kept laying all these problems. And what was our answer at the wicket? Not here. Okay? Where? What was our answer? Not here. This is not sustainable, Snowden or no Snowden. The issues are real. Governments have now been awakened. Now that's an effect of Snowden. The effect of Snowden is that the president of Mexico and president of Argentina, and I confirmed that personally, went back after the Dilma speech in the UN and asked their cabinet, who runs the internet in our country? And no one knew the answer. That's not sustainable. And so the last thing we want them to do is say, great, let's all go to the UN and get the UN to run it. Instead, we're offering them an opportunity to do the right thing, which is to bring all the stakeholders around the table and have us together figure out how do we manage our internet, because it's nobody's internet. It's our internet. That's the opportunity. And please, let's not lose track of that. Let's engage, not run away. Let's be part of this. Let's shape this agenda. I'll give you one last fact before I pass the microphone to my colleague. Believe me, the Brazilians could have announced in no time all the details many of you are asking, because they had them. I was in Sao Paulo recently. They could have announced exactly what will happen at the conference, who will be invited, how they will be invited. But who would have made that decision? The Brazilians. And they said, no, this is a global conference. Until all the stakeholders from the world are sitting at the table, we're not announcing anything. And that restraint showed me that they mean what they say. Now, that doesn't mean we trust. We verify. We check. We call. And I was in Davos, and I met with many leaders, and Madam President was there as well. And we are continuously on top of that issue until we exit Brazil with the outcomes that I hope we all meet. So please, Carolina.
Thank you again, Fadi, for all the details. And actually, yesterday meeting, representatives from all the stakeholders were actually there. So you actually should go back to the representatives that represent your group and ask them to send you a report or news. The civil society representatives. We are part of a coalition. International coalition of civil society and academia called Best Bits, and involved with that Diplo Foundation and many the governance caucus and all those folks, and we already got report from our three representatives there. So I actually can share some of the news, but there are some logistical information already in place. One of them is, for restriction of the size of the hotel, 700 people can go to the meeting. So registration is going to be open next month. And it's going to be a first-come, first-serve. And if there is more by stakeholder than other stakeholders, the stakeholder group is going to have to decide themselves who's going to go and who's not. So there are a lot of things that will happen in the next months in terms of registration. Another thing that's really interesting that for many of you may seem, I don't know, interesting, is the open submission by the website. I don't know a better word to say, because some people see that as non-legitimate or whatever. Brazil has a long experience on open government and some of the democratic process on building legislation. Of course, these are more recent. So both the reform of the copyright law, starting actually with the kids, the teens like law. We have a law that's just for kids and teens, right? So that the reform of that law, the copyright law reform, the access to information law, and the Marco Civil, they are all done through inputs of multi-stakeholders in Brazil. And what they do, it's incredible. I don't know, like people probably spend days and nights consolidating things. The Marco Civil has received more than 8,000 content submission, and from those, around 3,000 were actually taken into consideration, and then the legislative assistant took that, consolidated that, and sent to the reporter of the Marco Civil. So there is a process in place to actually get everything that's there and consolidate in some relevant document, and then feed back into the process. So I think there is a lot of things that we have experience with, even in terms of now talking, like looking at what happened in Brazil and platforms. So FGV, for example, the law school I used to work in Brazil before coming to U.S., they developed that with our Ministry of Justice. So it's a lot of really interesting, like, open government that allow open participation, even through Twitter and things like that. So
okay, Carolina.
I just wanted to give some of that.
They're going to kick us out in 5 minutes because they have another panel coming in. So if we're going to have any questions, we have to have them now, or we could have other panelists who are dying to speak. Okay, so I'm going to ask everybody who's really interested in to raise their hand now. I'm going to see how many I get. Have two. All right, we should have time for both of you. Let's go with you first.
Recently, that the time has come for the U.S. government oversight role to come to an end. Hmm. And in its place, I think I've heard you say that what would then apply would be the multi-stakeholder model. And my question revolves about how MS model would apply there. It seems to be good for developing a process, but not so good as an accountability mechanism. Hmm. What specific, could you be more descriptive of what you see happening should that role of the United States government come to an end?
Thank you, David. This is a very sensitive area, and I will address it openly and carefully. The U.S. government has been a superb steward of this function, and I say that all over the world. Our government, the U.S. government, has done a superb job as a steward of these core functions of the Internet. However, since the beginning of that stewardship, it was envisaged that as soon as ICANN has in place the necessary processes and mechanisms, and I'll get to these, David, that give the U.S. the sense that ICANN's multi-stakeholder accountability can provide the oversight of ICANN's implementation of these functions, that these functions' oversight would be transferred to the multi-stakeholder community at ICANN. It's always been envisaged. It was the plan. And in fact, originally, it was expected to happen a good 7-8 years ago. Right? But it hasn't happened. And it's not for me to comment on that. I'm new at ICANN as well. So I'm watching this process, and I've been engaged with NTIA extensively about this. And I think my message to NTIA is that it is time, because ICANN is now in a position to do that, and ICANN has matured quite a bit, that we are ready to take that accountability mechanism that we have inside ICANN, which is reflected in reviews, David, that are done today. We have a review, for example, of our transparency and accountability that just produced a very powerful report with tens of recommendations on how ICANN should improve. And they review, there are reviewers that get involved in every aspect of what we do to ensure that the community has proper oversight over the functions that ICANN fulfills. Now, some people are saying, I'm making that request now for the U.S. to pass its oversight stewardship to the ICANN community because we're feeling the impact of Snowden. But that's not true. I mean, Snowden certainly, as I said earlier, affects part of the discussion. But the reality is, for years, the ICANN community has been asking for that stewardship to be passed back to the stakeholders. And let me just emphasize something that if Larry Strickling was here, I believe he would say. Larry is a great believer in the multi-stakeholder model. I mean, he's one of its biggest global champions. And Larry believes, indeed, that that oversight, if limited to one party or one government, it's not so multi-stakeholder. So I think the U.S. government has always intended for this to become truly multi-stakeholder, but the time, in my opinion, has come. Now, it doesn't mean that we're going to rush, as Eric chided us not to do, and I don't think we should rush. I think we should do this calmly. We should do it carefully. We should check every possible thing that could go wrong because we're committed to the resilience and the stability of the Internet and certainly of the functions that ICANN is responsible for. So we're not asking for anything to be done quickly or in a rush. We're simply saying if it is recognized that what was envisaged is now in place, that ICANN is now has the breadth and the depth as a community to review itself, as we have been on multiple fronts, and to take that function, it is time to do that. Now, will this help us on other political fronts? Maybe, maybe not. But that shouldn't be our goal. Our goal should be to show the world that ICANN is truly a multi-stakeholder through and through community and that it is capable on its own to actually bring all the stakeholders to the table and perform these very critical functions.
Okay. Next question, Phil. Quickly. As quickly as I can ask it. Philip Corwin, a question for CEO Chowdhury. It's very significant that we're here talking about a meeting in Brazil rather than what ICANN is, itself is characterized as the biggest change that's ever happened to the domain name system, which is the introduction of this year of more than 1,000 new top-level domains, and yet that's both a great opportunity and a great threat to ICANN because ICANN, as an organization and the operation of the multi-stakeholder model within ICANN, which created the rules for that launch, will be judged by how it goes. So we're talking about Brazil, and yet there are many unresolved issues, even as new TLDs are being approved. Technical issues, policy issues, particularly requests from governments for consumer protections, particularly for strings related to regulated sectors.
Who's minding the story
Let me just, two more points I'll wrap it up.
Dirty looks from
the RPA, whether the right protection mechanisms will be administered effectively and balanced, and whether there's really a market for all these TLDs. I've heard concerns that there's so much attention being paid to the politics of internet governance that not enough attention may be being paid to to the new TLD program at a critical moment. What can you tell us to reassure folks who have those concerns?
Philip, you ask, I think, a very important question. Let me just give you quickly a sense of comfort on that. When I started, ICANN had 120 people. We're going to be 300 people by this June. We have brought a level of management to ICANN that ICANN did not have before. I have managed organizations and budgets that are good multiple times larger than ICANN, and I brought a team of people that can help us scale ICANN to the right level. ICANN has the depth and the breadth to manage multiple things at the same time now. I have three priorities at ICANN. We have the GTLD program, which we now have a special president for. So in case anyone is unclear, we have huge attention on the success of this program. And I think you know, Phil, that we have stabilized this program. When I arrived, there was major issues in it. It's stable. It's functioning, it's proceeding, it's not without issues. Issues need to be addressed as we go. But we now have the machinery to make sure this program happens, and it is happening. Next month, we will have the first new GTLDs added to the route, and I can assure you it will be without a problem because we have all the people on it. Okay? Thank you. Thank you, Professor. Thank you. Thank you.